In other news.
You know, the towers did not burn up. They turned into powder in midair.
That's scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
We walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. In January 2020, President Trump signed the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement Implementation Act, or USMCA, 2 weeks after it was overwhelmingly passed in the U.S. Senate. This agreement replaces the original 1994 North American Free Trade Agreement. It's reported that the USMCA is a trade bloc, similar to the regional trade blocs and integration scheme such as the African Union, the Association of the Southeast Asian Nations, the Community of Latin American and Caribbean States, the European Union, the Eurasian Economic Union, and the Latin American Integration Association. This structure could subject North American governing bodies to United Nations charters and treaties and push for surrendering inherent sovereign power to a regional government system. The USMCA will fast-track the United Nations agenda, known as Agenda 21, for local implementation, and Agenda 2030 for national implementation. This is a worldwide plan that is manifested into local government and regions of the United States and North America under the guise of environmentalism, but also through the technology of weather warfare and disaster capitalism, such as pandemics. UN Agenda 21 plans would implement multi-layered restrictions, such as limited access to electricity and transportation. It would impose unsustainable tax rates and arbitrarily seize private property for personal gain. Across the country, individuals are losing their rights to private property, land, and water as cities are replanned for high-density urban development and smart growth. Since the worldwide pandemic, stay-at-home order, and economic shutdown, you're going to read about how clean the earth is, reinforcing the ideology of laying the blame at the doorstep of the individual. We welcome back Rosa Corey, author of Behind the Green Mask, who says this is all by design. The book is described as a how-to manual for identifying and fighting UN Agenda 21, all the information you need to understand what is happening in your town, why it's happening, who is behind it, and what you can do to stop it. Rosa Corey is the executive director of the Post Sustainability Institute, where she studies the impacts of Agenda 21, sustainable development, and she runs the website Democrats Against UN Agenda 21. Rosa Corey, welcome back to Another News.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
President Trump signed the USMCA Implementation Act in January 2020. If his supporters knew what was in it, I suspect a lot of them wouldn't support it. However, the USMCA will have wide-reaching effects. Would you please give listeners an outline of what this is?
Yeah, well, the USMCA is the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement. It's an agreement, but it is basically a treaty. It's an extension of NAFTA. NAFTA ended, it was a 25-year plan, and then USMCA is a 16-year plan implemented as of 2020. It's basically a unification of North America into a single economy. That's the goal, a new North American union. It's calls for economic integration. And full harmonization is the goal. So when you know what harmonization is, that's sort of a keyword for adjusting all the laws and practices so that the three countries can be integrated together.
Have you noticed any criticism amid your colleagues about this plan? And I wanted to also ask, is this a treaty?
The thing with a treaty versus an agreement, you know, it's kind of hard to find the differences. Basically, some agreements don't require Senate ratification. This is a treaty. It's an agreement that did require Senate ratification. It was ratified by the United States Senate and also the governing bodies of Canada and Mexico. I'll just say, yes, there's obviously there's been a lot of chit-chat about this. People are very upset. You'll find constitutionalists, people who are concerned about the sovereignty of the United States, are concerned about this. And not just Americans are concerned about it, but Mexicans and Canadians are concerned about it as well. This is an actualization of United Nations Agenda 21, Sustainable Development, the agenda for the 21st century. So when you think about merging the economies of the United States, Canada, and Mexico, I'll just give you something to be slightly alarmed about here. The median household income in the United States is about $65,000 a year. And in Canada, in U.S. dollars, it's $60,000. But in Mexico, the median household income in United States dollars, the Mexican median household income, is $10,000 a year. So, you know, your question is going to be, how are you going to merge economies like that? And that's where you want to look at United Nations Agenda 21, Sustainable Development. That is, the answer is to have the developed nations transfer funds, technology, and data to the lesser developed nations. And, of course, that's also your answer for how you're going to deal with climate change, because that's also the global regional controls for water and land use and energy are also discussed in the USMCA.
The word sustainability is used throughout the USMCA. This word is the official buzzword, and it's you've taken note of this in much of your writings throughout the past decade. And it's been critiqued as artificial scarcity under the guise of conservation. It is a behavior modification scheme through social engineering. It's worldwide rationing. Less food, less water, less energy, less mobility, less choice, less freedom. Rosa, the pandemic outbreak has brought a sampling of this agenda into the lives of many people on this planet. What are your thoughts on the connection to UN Agenda 21 in this pandemic?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you definitely see it. It's certainly there. And, of course, artificial scarcity, austerity, consolidation of wealth. We're going to be seeing that with the stock market and possibly a real estate crash and currency manipulations. So the winners of this are, of course, the globalist controllers. And for Agenda 21, leveling the economies of the world is a goal so that they can be merged and managed centrally. Because this is what harmonization is. You can't centrally control through computerized means if everything doesn't match up. That's what that is. So if you're talking about lockdown and terror and crippling the economy and destroying mental health and scarcity and austerity, and by the way, destroying the Yellow Vest movement and the Hong Kong freedom movements, this is a perfect way to do it. It's an inventory and control plan. That's what Agenda 21 is. That's also what a coronavirus vaccination plan, whatever, is an inventory and control plan. You want to inventory everyone who's got it or who could have it or who might have an antibody, and then you want to be able to control. And this is what we've seen, of course, all across the world. This is the ultimate in total information, your DNA. So full medical information for experimentation is part of this plan. Here's the thing. Any global crisis, because it's global, it requires a global response, and that is going to justify global governance. And that's what we're looking at here with Agenda 21, global governance. That is the goal.
I was thinking about the social engineering aspect of this, because right now we can't walk into a grocery store without a mask or waiting in line. So we certainly have a less freedom element. And you mentioned vaccines. Well, one of the core principles of Agenda 2030 in their documents is to, quote, extend the benefits of vaccines to everyone, everywhere. The WHO is primarily funded by the Gates Foundation. Both organizations are talking about vaccines for everyone. And again, this is a specific alignment with Agenda 2030's core principle. What are your thoughts on this one specifically?
Immunization, Agenda 2030, this is how they name it. It's Immunization Agenda 2030, a global strategy to leave no one behind. Leaving no one behind. So, you know, not just vaccinate everyone, but, you know, the whole thing with this is that it's an invisible enemy, right? So everyone is your enemy. Everyone is your potential enemy. Everyone you see, including your family members, is not to be trusted. It's a danger to you. Terror is a vital part of this plan, because unless you're really vitally scared, you're not going to be agreeing to many of the elements of these plans. And Agenda 2030 is a milestone in the Agenda 21 plan, because Agenda 21 is the agenda for the 21st century, and Agenda 2030 is a 30-year-in milestone. So the concept is that incremental change can be accepted. You know, we're not talking about revolution in a sense of a violent revolution. We're talking about incremental change. And so the social change that we're experiencing now, which is global upheaval and social restrictions and forced obedience, as you noted, and financial collapse, is only new in its scope. All revolutions invoke this. The thing that we're seeing here is that it's not the same as, you know, having armies march down your street. In fact, you're going to be, a lot of people are begging to have everyone vaccinated. They're demanding it, and they will be doing that. And I fully believe that the numbers are inflated. In fact, the New York Post just put out an article, which is a great article to read, because it's about, you know, Bill de Blasio saying, hey, you know, you better rat your neighbors out if you see anything. Take a photo of it, send it, you know, to the cops, and they'll come out. But in their article, they published these numbers. Let me take a look at it here. The mortality total for New York City includes 8,448 New Yorkers whose COVID-19 cases were confirmed before their death, as well as 4,264 untested but probable victims. So they're showing a total of over 12,000 victims of COVID-19. But in fact, they're inflating the number by about 50%. In other words, it's 30% of those of that number is untested and solely probable. It just reminds me, actually, I'm sorry to bring this up, but it reminds me of 9/11, when the New York Times inflated the numbers of dead for months at 6,000. It was about 3,000. And the reason, you know, you have to ask yourself, what is the purpose of terrorizing the population like this?
There are many ways the corporate-owned media will manipulate numbers, and because we're hearing all kinds of numbers, and especially inflating the number of people who have passed, because terrifying the populace with ridiculous headlines the past few weeks has been quite startling and completely irresponsible by the corporate-owned media. Not that we expect anything different, but we are putting up with a lot at this point.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And I think, you know, obviously having alternative media, independent media, is really important. And all of us, this is one advantage that we have now with the internet. It's also, you know, whether it's temporary flypaper or not, at this point, it's what we have and we need to use it. So I really encourage people to, you know, in spite of the fact that I know you're, you know, kind of crawling up the walls these days, but, you know, use this opportunity that you have to do your research and, you know, and do some hard reading and leave that, you know, Facebook and cat video stuff, you know, to somebody else, and instead make yourself, you know, as knowledgeable as possible. You've certainly got some time now. You've got an opportunity. And the thing to do is to do your own research, certainly, and verify always with source documents. So that's definitely what I do. And I think that what we're seeing now, you know, certainly with, you know, over 20 million people out of work and the potential, and that's in the United States, the potential for long-term unemployment if people aren't able to resurrect their businesses, we're going to see more homeless. So what I'm looking at here is thinking about how it is that people are going to survive, you know, after they're released from their home lockdown, after they're no longer, you know, trapped and out of work. So the thing is are you going to be able to go back to work? And if not, let's say this is an opportunity for a lot of businesses to retool with robotics. It's an opportunity for artificial intelligence to make, perhaps replace human beings. And so then we look at the question of, well, what are people going to do? And this is one thing that I think it's important to look at Agenda 21, because Agenda 21, I'd like to just define it for people. You know, it is sustainable development. As the United Nations defines it, it's the comprehensive blueprint and plan of action to be taken by all governments and all organizations and everyone around the world. And really what it is it's an inventory and control plan to inventory and control all the resources of the planet, all the means of production, the systems and information, energy, education, and all human beings in the world. It's an inventory and control plan. And to have such an enormous plan succeed, it's really necessary to have an ideology. And that ideology makes you think of yourself as a global citizen. So if you think of yourself as a global citizen, I feel like I'd like to, you know, metaphorically, you know, grab you by the lapels and pull you up and say, hey, you know, a global citizen is a citizen of nothing. Because you have no voice, you have no vote, you have no opportunity to dissent. You do not want to identify yourself as a global citizen. And in fact, there was just on Saturday, the 18th, there was just something like an eight-hour concert put on by the World Health Organization, the UN, and other agencies, plus mega corporations. It was an all-day concert on global citizen concert. And they've actually been putting these things on every year for the past 10 years or so, and it's mainly targeting young people. I think Lady Gaga and, you know, a bunch of people were participating in it, and they do it every year, and oftentimes it's in New York. It's in several places around the world. So this is the kind of thing where they use an ideology, global citizen ideology. You are a citizen of the world, and not only that, it's a free concert. And, you know, I hope you don't think I'm wandering from the point. I'm not. It's a free concert that you obtain a ticket by doing some political action, by being an activist. And you are directed in that activism by the United Nations. They tell you what it is that you should be, you know, agitating about. And if you successfully go through their little hoops, then you get a ticket to this thing. Well, this, of course, this year it's virtual. And so they broadcast it for everyone. But most people don't even know this thing exists. And so the reason I'm talking about it is because the target is often young people. And the universities are used as a method to transform the population through this ideology. And true transformation is destruction of the existing system, destroying the old and replacing it with the new. And so that's what change really is. All for all of you who thought Obama was so great, change is really destruction and disruption of the old way. So anyway, that's where we're at right now. And I think they've progressed quite a bit with this worldwide shutdown, which I believe was an experiment to see really if it could be done.
You know, you're going to have people that will police other people just because they think they're doing the right thing. But it is a prime example of what you're describing here in terms of indoctrinating and social engineering the younger generation. Most people want to do something good, but they don't know how to do it. And they trust these agencies in the United Nations, and they're fighting hunger. They're curing disease. How could this be wrong? So it is a slap in the face for a lot of those who are investigating a little deeper and seeing what the truth is. And I think this is a time, too, as you pointed out, where people are finding that information through your work and other broadcasts about what's really behind the green mask.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, that's why I called my book Behind the Green Mask, because it sounds so good. Everything sounds so great. Of course you want to save the planet, and of course you want to, you know, take care of the poor, and you know, you want to make sure that women are equally respected and taking care of, you know, everything, they have businesses, etc. All that stuff sounds so great. And you know, truly, if it didn't sound good, you wouldn't buy into it. So this is the whole design of the thing, is that you yourself are going to be going along with this plan unless you know what it is, because on the face of it, it sounds great and you're going to want to support it. Of course, too, you know, I want to say that a lot of people who are aware of this plan, who understand what it looks like, and it's, you know, it looks like a land use plan, it looks like a water restriction plan, a transportation plan, you know, that these are the things that how you're going to look at it. It looks like a smart plan, smart sustainability monitoring, assessing, rating, and tracking. That's what it is. Of course, you're going to support it. You're going to think it's cool and it's great. You read about it, or you've got your degree in organizational management, or you're a change agent. And this is part of your life. It's not only a part of your life, it's the way you make your living. And there are an awful lot of people who make their living making the plan happen. And they see themselves as good people. And, of course, they probably are good people. And so they don't want to look too deeply into it, because then they're going to find out that they're going to have to quit their jobs. And people are not willing to do that generally. And you can't blame them. They've spent their entire career getting a degree in Agenda 21. So they're going to tell you you're crazy. This is what I say. If it's crazy, if it doesn't make sense, it is Agenda 21. And that's, of course, what we've seen with this total lockdown, where, you know, you have a limited number of people die, and then you're locking down the entire world. And later you find your tests don't work and whatever. You know, and this is it's a test to see how far they can go. And, of course, they haven't even gone as far as they can go. And people will go along, because in World War II, it wasn't that the German people were terrible people. It was just that they accepted the plan, and they went along with it, and they refused to look deeply into it. And, you know, the same thing with any forced dictatorship, with any movement like that that restricts other people. You can see yourself as the good one and them as the bad people who are deserving of being restricted. And this is, in a way, in order to make this a global plan, you see, you need something that's external. You need like a virus, or you need climate change, or you need an alien landing, which I'm sure they would have loved to have had something like that. So, you know, here we are with a virus. It's perfect. It's so perfect. And you can expect to see this again.
Well, one of the building blocks here, as you know, is regionalism. And that's talked about as being the strategy to coalesce power into a large umbrella of governance. Right now, regional governance comprises of, for example, unelected bureaucracy, county commissioners, government employees. And they put together policy, which is voted on by regional councils, such as local mayors, city council members, and county commissioners. Would regional governance have greater power under the USMCA?
Oh, yeah, definitely. The USMCA, it elevates regional governance. For your listeners, I mean, what's really important to think about here, you're going to see that term region used a lot. And you're going to be, you know, you'll be in the greater Chicago region, or you'll be in the San Francisco Bay Area, or, you know, whatever. And you think of the term region doesn't really mean anything to you. And, you know, regional parks, I mean, region seems okay, right? But the thing is that, you know, as an American, and if you're not an American, you're Canadian or whatever, you're listening to this from another country, you know, you elect your city, county, state, and fed. Those are elected positions. You have open government. You can go to the meetings. You can speak out. You can organize against whoever's elected there, and you can have them removed for office. You can run yourself, whatever. But with regional governance, you have no rights. You don't, in fact, know where the board meets. The board may have 170 cities and counties sitting on it. And so even if you remove one of those people from the board itself just keeps going. you have no way to influence it. You may not even know where it meets or that it exists. Regional governance is the stepping stone. It's the interim step between what we have now and full globalization, full single control from centralized control with a global governance. Governance is not the same as government, and you don't elect governance. It's unelected boards and commissions. It's a bureaucracy. So yes, USMCA, the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement, it's designed to elevate that regional governance. It's got a free trade commission, which is the lead bureaucracy, and then that they actually can change that agreement. The people who are on that are government representatives, so it's government by committee. And they can actually change this agreement, which has been ratified by the Senate, right, and signed by the president, but they can actually change it now. There's a 5-member panel dispute settlement group that's regulated by a United Nations treaty that the United States never agreed to back in 1969. And they've been trying to get the U.S. to agree to it forever, but the U.S. never did agree to it. But that governs this agreement. So these are really important things to know. The thing is, it's like you were saying, Jeff, this stuff sounds good. A lot of it sounds really cool. But that's the green mask. If you have the candy coating of, eradicate poverty, we're all going to be, increasing the income of Mexicans and, whatever, great, that sounds cool. The bottom line on this stuff is the incremental transfer of sovereignty. And that's what we have as Americans. This is part of the problem with having an open border, is that you have less loyalty to an ideology that is what created the United States. And yes, the U.S. has made mistakes. There's no question about it. But, certainly, you can make a litany of the things that have gone wrong with the United States, but we still have our document, our founding document, the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, that are our ideal and that we have loyalty to. We are committed to upholding, and that is the individual's rights. So that's what's important about our nation, and that's what we need to protect. If we are continually worn down with the idea that we're part of a global, or just a global citizen, we won't notice when we've lost those rights.
Agenda 21, as you've pointed out for nearly a decade or more, it's been lurking in the background, slowly dismantling the elements that make this country a sovereign country and protect it. I was listening to someone who was criticizing the USMCA, and he asked the question, did Congress give up its constitutional protection to negotiate with foreign nations and hand it over to a North American bureaucracy by approving the USMCA? Have you heard of that? Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, sure. Yes. That's right. That's exactly right. The fact that this is a so-called living document, and you'll see that term used, even locally. I hate to say this, it's as if agents have been, dispersed into every hamlet, every town, every city, every state in the United States and around the world. This is a global plan. It's the same plan all over the world. So yes, definitely. This is a living document, and so it can be changed. It's already been ratified by the Senate. If it can be changed, well, what does that mean, a ratification? The Congress is you and me. That's what we are. We are, the Congress is there so that we can go about the business of our lives. That's what we do. We elect these people to represent us. If we are unable, if we have lost our representation, then we are subjects. Either some dictatorship or we simply are irrelevant. We are simply a nuisance to be dealt with. And I think that's the most important thing. We really have dropped the ball, all of us. If you're upset by what you're hearing when I'm talking about, and I hope that you are, get up right now and go look in your mirror. This is why we have a problem right now, is we have accepted a lot of lies, a lot of rhetoric that sounded good, and we haven't really done anything about it. There are things that we can do. We have not lost yet. as I say, this is a great time for you to utilize this moment when you're looking around for something to do with your time to educate yourself. And I do hope that people will take a look at my websites. One of them is called Democrats Against UN Agenda 21.com, Democrats Against UN Agenda 21.com. I'm still a registered Democrat. This is not a left-right issue. I've been on the left for many years. Now I am an independent. I'm no longer a Democrat, although I'm still registered that way. But it's irrelevant at this point. See, I think the thing that people really need to do is to think about what they can do. And I do have 20 pages in my book, and there's a lot on my website on what you can do. You know, I get literally hundreds of emails every day on people saying, well, God, Rosa, what am I going to do? What can I do? I see it. There is a lot you can do. The first thing you can do is something. Take 15 minutes a day and do something. Educate yourself. Send out some information to people. Read about what Agenda 21, the agenda for the 21st century, looks like in your town. Look at your web browser and then put in the name of your town with sustainable development and see what comes up. Look at regional planning and your town name and see what comes up. What you're going to be looking at there is Agenda 21. Look at climate action plans and your town name. Look at your mayor's name, the people who are on your council, people who are running for office. Look at their names with sustainable development. Look at your local university. UCLA has 509 courses on sustainable development. Are they all about recycling? No, they're absolutely not. This is an ideology. It's an ideology. It's a design style. It's a new way of governance. And you need to educate yourself about it and then share the information. This is not some right-wing, not that there's anything wrong with people on the right, I don't think, but it's not a conspiracy theory. It's a conspiracy fact. It's up to us to educate ourselves and then to call a halt to this. We need to speak up and speak out. If you're in a university and you see this being taught, stand up and speak out. If you're at a government meeting, stand up and speak out. If you're in your union meeting, if you're at your office, if you're in a management meeting and you see this happening there, you need to identify it and speak out about it. You need to educate yourself so you know what you're looking at. Because Agenda 21, it's a stealth plan in plain sight. It's a global plan implemented locally. And so that's why it looks different. Everywhere it is, it's got a different name on it, but it's all the same plan.
I think it's also important to remind listeners that fifth generation wireless radiation, known as 5G, is an essential component of the Agenda 21 Smart City Plan as fully realized in Wuhan, China, with 100,000 5G antenna bathing the entire environment there with 60 gigahertz radiation operating driverless cars, for example. And there's no demand for this. However, world banks are funding this build-out. Rosa, would you remind listeners about how wireless radiation infrastructures funded by international financial systems connecting to the United Nations?
Mm-hmm. Well, what we're seeing, you're going to be seeing microgrids. The plan is an energy plan as well, of course, because it's, a climate action plan. So it's energy. It's about austerity and scarcity and restriction. Of course, anyone who is dissenting to this plan, anyone who dissents is an enemy. It's a communitarian plan, which means that the individual's rights are always balanced against the rights of the greater good, the greater community. And the individual, unless the individual agrees with this plan, is a danger to it. And so their rights, the individual's rights are going to be balanced with and found to be losing against the community rights. So that's important to think about in the context of how much power you have. So when you're talking about being able to target specific individuals, and that I think that's what we're going to get down to, 5G is really good for that because it's very localized. And so you're going to have your microgrids. You're going to be being able to control power right down to a specific locale. Right now, even with OnStar in your vehicle can be shut off remotely. If you have a self-driving vehicle, then you're not, of course, going to be, you may lose control over that. You'll probably have to show your identification to get into it, because how is it going to be billed? So then you're in there and maybe you're not able to direct where that goes or whether it goes. Yes, 5G, you know, as far as the, you know, there's certainly a lot of controversy on the issue of health, and that's definitely a concern. What I'm concerned about also is the applications for Agenda 21, Sustainable Development, and how it's going to be built into every construction project, every major construction project around the world, in order to monitor, manage, and control your energy and water usage. And that is, you know, of course, vital to your life. And I think one thing that people are realizing as they sit in their homes is how dependent they are, and how dependent we all are on others for our food and our water. So, you know, when you're out in on land, you're going to find that your water well is being monitored and controlled, and your ability to get into the city or get your goods to market or whatever is going to be limited. So with 5G, when you're in a major city, and these are for major transportation centers, major population centers, the idea is that you're going to be more and more regulated, more monitored, more controlled, and austerity measures are going to be loosed on you, and you're going to have less mobility and less ability to use your resources. And this is, you know, especially the idea is, you know, you can fully believe when you live in a high, you know, a highly constructed, dense city center, a mega region. When you're told that human beings are destroying the planet and you look around you and all you see is concrete, that's something that you can believe. Even though if you go, you know, 30 or 40 or 50 miles outside of your town, you're going to see wilderness. But this is why concentration of populations into city centers is desirable for this Agenda 21 plan. And you're more easily managed and controlled than under the 5G plan.
Thanks for going into detail there. That's extremely important. Another component, Rosa, is climate engineering. There's an activist out there in California named Gary Galerno, who examined a report issued by the 2019 Council General Government Subcommittee Agenda from Everett, Washington. In one paragraph titled, "Why Do We Need to Take Local Actions?" it reads, "Our rapidly changing climate and rising global temperatures impact our city, state, nation, and the entire planet. We're already witnessing more extreme weather and climate events in our region. Hotter summers, more wildfires, increased flooding risk, and more. Acting locally allows citizens in the community to take actions to collectively preserve our health and quality of life for current and future generations," end quote. There's a mountain of evidence exposing real-time weather control operations and climate engineering, and it's been shown to modify and control temperature, manipulate and move the atmospheric river and the jet stream, and force precipitation and drought events. This implies direct collusion with the United Nations Agenda 21 program, the long-term agenda pushed along with falsified reports of pending environmental catastrophe. What are your thoughts on this element here?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting because I one of the places that I live throughout the year, part of the year, is Santa Rosa, California. And for the last 3 years, for the last three falls, we've had tremendous, serious fire events. And, you know, the question is, why? And why specifically in that area? And what is it? Manipulation of the climate. What's happening is that our ability to live independently out in the rural areas is being limited. Agenda 21 moves people out of the rural and suburban areas into highly concentrated, dense city centers. And, you know, I'll just say as an aside here that Wuhan is a very highly concentrated, dense area and also relies on a lot of public transportation. And this is part of this plan, is to make you completely dependent on public transportation and to be, you know, living in very small, dense units in concentrated city centers. And of course, this, you know, facilitates the spread of disease. Also, other violent climate disaster can be heavily affecting people who are in densely populated centers because you have less ability to be independent, less ability to get out, especially, you know, if you're in a multi-story building. Look at how easy it is to regulate the population in a single building. Basically, all you need is one key and one lock, and you've locked up dozens or hundreds of people. So one of the things that we need to look at is how it is that we're being directed by this plan, what it is that is being used to manipulate this plan, and what the goal of the plan is. So whether it's, you know, regulating climate, adjusting our ability to expect to be able to use our resources freely, to move freely, to live where we wish, to do the work that we want to do, all of this is threatened by this plan, which is not, you know, when I use the term plan, you know, sometimes people think, well, plan, you know, that's something out there in the future. It's not really it. But this is an action plan. It's a blueprint. Wherever you live, this plan is being implemented for probably 20 years. You just need to know what it's called. So the plan is not some new thing. In fact, look at in California, they've just passed a law, which is it's actually gone into effect, but the people are completely unaware of it because the penalties have not gone into effect yet, that say that each person is entitled to only 55 gallons of water a day. That is an Agenda 21 plan. That's an Agenda 21 that's being implemented as a part of Agenda 21, restricting your energy, your water usage, your land, whatever, your resource use. And that has actually been passed and has gone into law. Because the penalty phase doesn't start until 2023, nobody even knows it's happening.
That certainly connects into a manufactured drought issue, but 55 gallons a day, well, that certainly isn't very much, especially if you have a party of maybe 20 people and they use the bathroom?
Mm-hmm. Each flush is 1.6 gallons, which is supposed to be in California and other places. But the thought of it, too, is thinking about being able to grow your own food and having a garden. All the things that you use water for, that you think about, just having to be restricted. And in fact, you know, this plan isn't just, as I said, it's not just in California or in the United States. It's a global plan. Well, they're restricting water use in Canada. And Canada has, I think, 20% of the world's fresh water. And Canada's, I can't remember what the total population is, but it's a very limited population and a very huge landmass with a lot of water, timber, oil, gas, minerals. And yet they're having restrictions and austerity. You know, this is the plan. Again, if it's crazy, it's Agenda 21. It doesn't necessarily relate to anything real. It's just that forcing us into a box, pushing us down, restricting us, limiting us, and getting us used to the idea that we are not entitled, to be free people, that we cannot speak up because we're destroying the planet. Or as Ted Turner, the mogul, Ted Turner said, the guy who owns, I think, 11 million acres, he said, it's, you know, the thing about the planet is so bad is that there's too many people using up too much stuff, and people have to reduce their population, right? And he, of course, has 5 kids. There's a lot of hypocrisy in this plan, but, you know, you're not supposed to point that out because the plan is really about limiting the population of the planet, restricting the population, and that certainly goes back, you know, that it goes back to Galton, Darwin. It goes back to the Fabian socialists of the 1800s, and then, you know, on up into 1972 with the limits to growth, with Club of Rome, and everything, you know, that you're seeing now. Of course, Bill Gates and all that. It's, you know, the population needs to be limited and reduced and restricted. And gee, how are we going to do that?
You made me think about Bill Gates for a moment and his connection with Agenda 21. I'm sure his name has come up. What are your thoughts on Bill Gates now and in terms of being involved in funding elements of the UN Agenda 21?
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a plan that is certainly extremely wealthy and powerful people will always try and use your money to make the plan happen rather than their own. But the thing is that this is not just a government plan, and it's not just a university plan. It's not just a non-governmental organization plan. It's a business plan as well. It is a major corporation, a mega corporation plan. And the largest corporations, the major mega corporations of the planet are facilitating the plan movement. So when someone like Bill Gates, has taken on the health of the planet, and is actually pushing the sustainable development goals, then, you have to take a look at it, of course. And one thing is, eradicating poverty, bringing up, empowering women and children, and making people's health better. Everyone wants that. I don't think there's anyone on the planet who doesn't think that that's a good thing. But, again, it's the green mask. This is what, this is what makes this plan look so good. And so you have people who are major industrialists who are really interested in controlling the population of the planet. And this is not a new thing, as I was just saying. So it's known that, the more educated women are, the less likely that they will have children. And if you remove religion from people's lives, they will not have as many children. If you bring up the quality of their lives, the danger in these people's minds is that they're going to have more kids. If you end the famine, people are going to want to start having more children. So you need to quickly counter that by educating primarily women and letting them know that they shouldn't have children, that they are actually killing the planet, that they're responsible for killing the planet. And so therefore they should have, no children. And I think in 1972 with Limits to Growth, that had a big impact. It was an international bestseller, sold over 30 million copies. And I read that at the age of, 16 or 15, and didn't have children. And I'm not unusual. My generation had far less children. So I think this is one of the things that you need to look at is what's behind that green mask? Why is it that these programs are being pushed and planned by people who are so incredibly wealthy and have such an interest in controlling the resources of the planet?
There are many reasons for that, and total, complete control, full spectrum dominance, however you want to say it. It's certainly interesting how Bill Gates is involved with the climate engineering operations and the vaccine operations, and he's very involved in Agenda 21 at the moment. You asked a very important question: Why are they involved with a depopulation program? It's certainly part of what they call their great work. Rosa Zachori, Behind the Green Mask is the title of your book, one of the most important books to read if you want to learn about how the UN and related agencies have used the disguise of being environmentally mindful to stack and pack people to urban centers with a full spectrum control grid from top to bottom. That's what we are talking about, and it is being implemented right now, and again, it's being fast-tracked under the USMCA, that's the United States-Mexico-Canada agreement that was recently signed by President Donald Trump. This is why I wanted to have you on the show, Rosa. If people want to reach out and find more information about your work, how do they do it?
Well, the easy, quick way to do it is just to put Rosa and Agenda 21 in your search browser. That's pretty fast. And I encourage people to read my book, which is an international bestseller, I'm very glad to say, and has been. Even though it came out in 2011, it's still a bestseller. It's one of those things that doesn't get old, unfortunately. and you can get that on Amazon or Kindle, and you can also buy it directly from us. There's a website for the book, behindthegreenmask.com. And then our websites, postsustainabilityinstitute.org and democratsagainstunagenda21.com. And I really encourage you to get some information, you know, to not be, you know, kind of bewildered by everything that's happening and kind of blown around by it, but instead to take control and to educate yourself and others and to understand what it is to be a free human being, an individual, and celebrate that and participate in that and be that person. Be that person who is independent and is thinking for yourself, and then share the information. It's the most important thing you can do.
Rosa Corey, again, you're an inspiration for many, and I really appreciate you being back on In Other News. You were on the show in 2012. I think you were doing the interview from a hotel room because you were on the road, and I appreciated that as well. So again, thank you for being on the show.
Thanks so much, Jeff. It was a pleasure talking with you.
After NAFTA's adoption more than 25 years ago, the United States lost nearly one-fourth of all of its manufacturing jobs, including more than one in five vehicle manufacturing jobs. Think of that. One in five jobs lost so needlessly. Thousands of factories were shuttered. Millions of manufacturing jobs were destroyed. And entire communities were devastated from Ohio to Pennsylvania, Michigan to Maine, and California to North Carolina, devastated. Two decades of politicians ran for office vowing to replace the NAFTA. And this was a catastrophe, the NAFTA catastrophe. Yet once elected, they never even tried. They never even gave it a shot. They sold out. But I'm not like those other politicians, I guess in many ways. I keep my promises and I'm fighting for the American worker. And we're all fighting for the American worker. Everybody here is fighting for the American worker. This agreement is a tremendous breakthrough for American agriculture. Canada will finally provide greater access for American dairy. Canada's opening up. It will grow annual exports to our neighbors by an estimated $315 million. Poultry exports to Canada are expected to rise by at least 50%, and egg export could increase by 500%. Where is the Canadian folks? Where are they? You guys did a good job on us before this deal, I'll tell you. Canada was very tough, but they're good. They're our friends, so we appreciate it. Very importantly, Canada will finally give fair treatment to American-grown wheat. The USMCA is also a massive win for American manufacturers and auto workers. Under NAFTA, companies were given huge incentives to produce cars in foreign countries and ship them to America tax-free. No tax, no nothing. We lost our jobs, we closed our factories, and other countries built our cars. But we've changed that, and we're now setting records. The USMCA closes these terrible loopholes.
That was President Donald Trump making brief comments about the USMCA, and according to Rosa Corey's analysis, some of those comments are far from accurate. We hear part of a commentary by Gary Guillermo, an activist in Southern California. He explains the social engineering that has allowed President Donald Trump to pass corrosive measures such as the Real ID Act and the USMCA and support 5G installation.
People in this country do not understand what his policies are. So on the one end, half the country, the supporters of the president, their attitude is, well, if Trump put his name on it and he signed it, then it has to be good. It must be America first. Therefore, I don't need to look into it. I don't need to question it. It's the right thing for the country. So that's half the country. The other half of the country, what I refer to now as the alleged opposition, they are not opposition at all. And what I mean by that is when I talk to Trump supporters and I bring up these issues, they always say, well, the media is so against him and all these entities and everyone's trying to stop him in the movies and the entertainment and the music and whatever, right? Everyone's against him. But the reality is, if you talk to anyone that really is against Trump, why are they against him in the first place? Well, they're against him because 4 years ago, he said that Mexicans were rapists, murderers, and drug dealers. That's it. There's really no other reason why they are against him. They're against Donald Trump because he's a mean-spirited, racist, bigoted, old white man. That's why they're against Donald Trump. They're not against him because he's pushing because he funded the Real ID National ID card. They're not against him because during the campaign, he made anti-vax statements and is now making pro-vax statements. They're not against him because he's pushing red flag laws. They're not against him for the USMCA bill that he just signed. They're not against him for pushing 5G. They're not against him for spending more than any other president than ever before him. They're not against him for growing the government more than any president before him. They're not against him for funding the military-industrial complex more than anyone has before him. They're against him because he's a racist. That's it. That is not opposition. If the opposition actually could sit down and lay out the points that I just made, we might actually be able to stop this guy a little more frequently. But instead, half the country says, well, if he did it, it must be good. The other half says, well, he's racist. So the only people that are opposing him are people like me, people like Joe, and, you know, we're the ones that are laying out the real issues. And because the opposition refuses to even look at his policy issues, all they look at is race all day long, there is no opposition because no one's actually opposing what Donald Trump is doing.
That was Gary Guillermo, a politically active citizen in Southern California, bringing awareness to the methodical implementation of UN Agenda 21 in the United States. His YouTube channel is Grindall61, Grindall61. That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.